and bathroom toiletries, and told me to make myself comfortable while he went to work. He wasn't exactly warm and fuzzy, but I felt welcome. Like if I told him I wanted to hide out here for the next few days, or weeks, or even longer, he'd just shrug like it wasn't a big deal. The door opened, and I heard Gibson's heavy boots on the floor. Slowly, I let my eyes drift open. He stood just inside as if he'd paused mid-step to look at me. God, that brow furrow was sexy. "You okay?" he asked. I took one last cleansing breath. "Fine. Great, actually. I was just meditating."
"Huh. Hungry?
Is it lunchtime already?" I uncrossed my legs and stretched them out, wiggling my bare toes.
"Yeah."
Something dinged, and he pulled his phone out of his back pocket. With a roll of his eyes, he put it back. "Everything all right?"
"Scarlet's just being Scarlet."
He went into the kitchen, so I got up and followed.
"It's fine, I'll handle her."
"Handle her?" He got out a loaf of bread and set it on the counter.
"She saw your sandals this morning, so now she thinks I have a girlfriend I'm hiding from everyone."
"Gibson's secret girlfriend?" I bit my bottom lip to keep from smiling. Why did that thought make me so giddy? God, I wasn't a little girl anymore. But it was still fun to imagine. "Are you known for hiding women out here?" He scowled down at the sandwich he was making.
"No."
I nudged him with my elbow. "Uh-oh. Should I have checked to see if you locked me in from the outside?" That earned me a smile.
"Yeah, I barred the door so you couldn't get out."
"I had a feeling you were evil." A knock at the front door made me jump. Gasping, I grabbed Gibson's arm. His solid muscle flexed in my grip and he looked down at my hand. I was about to snatch it away and apologize, but then he gently laid his over mine.
"Wait in the bedroom. I'll get rid of him."
He squeezed my hand. I nodded and he let go. I cast a quick glance around to see if there was anything obvious sitting out that someone might see from the doorway. The blanket I'd used for meditating was on the floor, but that wasn't incriminating. I picked up my sandals, letting them dangle from my grasp, and tiptoed down the hall to Gibson's bedroom. A woman's voice came from the front of the house, but I couldn't quite make out what she said. "Hi, Gibson, most likely." I stood by the bedroom door, leaving it open just a crack, and strained to listen.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked.
Well, I just..."
She trailed off, her voice soft.
"Here."
"What's this?"
"Brownies," she said.
"Why did you bring me brownies?"
Gibson sounded genuinely confused.
"Oh, you know, just being neighborly."
There was a slight pause.
"Did Scarlet put you up to this?"
"Scarlet? No, not at all. She might have mentioned something about you having company. And if you did, have company, that is, I thought you might enjoy some brownies. I baked 4 batches this morning, and they needed a home, so there you are."
I could practically feel Gibson's irritation all the way back here. I bit my lip again to keep from giggling.
"Thanks, I guess," he said.
"Sure, it's my pleasure. If y'all are needing anything else, you can just let me know."
"Bye, Millie."
"Oh, I almost forgot. Let your girlfriend know she's invited to book club. First meeting is at the library tomorrow."
"I don't have a girlfriend."
"Right, of course. Secret girlfriend. Sorry, I forgot. In that case, she can come in a disguise if she wants. And tell her not to worry if she hadn't read the book yet. Some of us haven't had a chance. We'll start by discussing the author so there won't be any spoilers while the rest of the ladies catch up."
"Bye, Millie,"
he growled, and I heard the door shut. I hesitated a few seconds before coming out. "Is the coast clear?" He stood near the door, a foil-covered dish in his hands.
"Yeah."
Was that Millie Waggle?
"She brought brownies."
He he said, looking down at them, his expression bewildered.
Is it unusual for Millie to bring people brownies?
I lifted the foil and inhaled. Oh my God, these smell amazing.
No, she delivers them all over town, just never to me.
I pinched a bit of the crispy corner and popped it in my mouth. It tasted like chocolate heaven.
Wow, that's good. I guess having a secret girlfriend has some unexpected benefits.
You're not my...
He growled in frustration and took the brownies into the kitchen.
This is how it starts. You know that, right? First it's Millie with brownies. Next it'll be someone with a casserole, and pretty soon I'll be answering the door every hour to someone new with a dish in their hands.
Why is this bad?
I followed him in and took another pinch of brownie, a bigger one this time.
That sounds like nice neighbors bringing food.
They ain't doing it to be nice, he said. They're doing it to get up in my business and to find out who you are.
Did Millie really hear the secret girlfriend thing from Scarlett already? She was here like 4 hours ago. His eyebrows drew together.
You remember this is Bootleg Springs, right? Half the town knows by now, and the other half will by sundown.
I leaned against the counter, picking at the brownies. Why was I being so indecisive? I should go. I could figure out what to do about the investigation and the Kendalls from my motel 50 miles away, or from L.A. I could put 3,000 miles between me and this place. Disappear again. What was I waiting for?
Look, don't worry about it, Gibson said.
There was that softness in his voice I'd heard last night. It made me feel all gooey, like Millie's brownies.
We'll just keep your stuff in the bedroom, and if anyone comes knocking, you can hide back there while I get rid of them.
The question hung in the air between us, unspoken.
Then what?
I didn't know the answer to that, and he didn't seem to either. And maybe for now, that was where we needed to be. Here, in his house, not knowing what to do. Because the truth was, now that I was here, I couldn't seem to make myself leave.
Chapter 10, Gibson. I hated leaving Callie at my place alone. I'd given her Jameson's number. I trusted him to keep his mouth shut in case of emergency. Closed all the curtains, checked the doors half a dozen times to make sure they were locked, and left her a crowbar and a hammer near the door. What was I so worried about? Hell if I knew. There was a lot she hadn't said, hadn't needed to say. I could figure it out. She'd stayed away because she was afraid of her father. She still was. I'd seen the fear in her eyes. Jamie had said Judge Kendall was dangerous. Sheriff had, too. I reckon they were right, and the urge to protect her from him was overwhelming. I'd failed her 13 years ago. I wasn't going to fail her again. I wasn't sure if the Kendalls were still in town. They were usually here during the summer, but the season was winding down, and with the recent announcement that he was up for a federal judgeship, they might have gone back to their main home in Virginia. It wouldn't be hard to find out, and I'd sleep better knowing they were gone. But until I could be sure, I wasn't taking any chances. Reluctantly, I pushed open the door to the lookout, my guitar case in hand. Noise spilled out into the darkness. Music, voices. Hung and Corbin were already here setting up. The fact that we were supposed to play tonight was the only reason I'd come. Otherwise, I'd have shut off my phone, shut out the world, and spent the evening at home with Callie. We seemed to have an unspoken understanding, Callie and me. I knew she was still trying to work out what to do, whether she could come forward and what that would mean for her. I also knew she had one foot out the door, ready to disappear again, this time for good. But for now, however long now lasted, she'd stay. I hadn't told her she should, and she hadn't asked if I minded. That would have felt too much like making a firm decision. Maybe I didn't understand women, but I understood this. She needed a little time to figure this out. The least I could do was give it to her. Tonight, that meant showing up at the lookout and acting like nothing was going on. Nicolette nodded to me from behind the bar. She already had a water for me. Mason jar, no ice, with a straw.
Evening,
she said, pushing the water across the bar. Tonight she was wearing a shirt that said, I know what you did. Sincerely, Karma.
Cutting it close tonight.
I'm here, ain't I? I set my guitar case down.
Yeah, you are.
She eyed me up and down.
Alone?
I'm always here alone. What does that have to do with anything? She poured a beer from the tap for one of her customers.
Just an observation.
I didn't respond, just grabbed my water and took a sip. No surprise that it was packed on a Friday. A few grizzled old-timers sat at the bar, nursing whiskeys and faded memories. A group of summertimers took up a couple of tables. Locals, including a handful of Bodines, took up the others. Rhett Gensler sat on a stool at one end of the bar, hunched over his drink, his trucker hat pulled down low. Misty Lynn was here too, unfortunately. Judging by Rhett's dejected posture and Misty Lynn's seat on the opposite side of the bar, those two were still broken up. I gave it a week, two tops, before they were back together. As far as I was concerned, they deserved each other. Misty Lynn kept leading him on, but he kept taking her back. Wasn't my fault he was a dumbass and she was a shitty human being. Misty Lynn glanced up at me, and at least she had the decency to look guilty. I ignored her. I was still pissed she'd stolen my wallet, even more so that she'd turned it in, but I didn't want to talk to her, even to tell her off. Bad enough I had to share this town with her. I picked up my guitar case and took it to the little stage where Hung and Corbin were setting up, put my water on a table nearby, and got out my guitar. Corbin looked past me a few times, like he was watching the door. You waiting for someone? I asked, lifting the guitar strap over my shoulder.
Me? No, he said. I just thought you might have brought...
Might have brought what? He shut his mouth and shrugged.
Never mind.
As predicted, the rumor mill had been churning. After Millie had stopped by with brownies, Sally Mae Brickman had brought over a loaf of fresh bread, followed closely by Tanya Varney with a bag of pepperoni rolls. She'd claimed she had extra, and why not go see if Gibson Bodine could use a hot meal? I knew their game. No one brought me food. Most people stayed away from my place if they knew what was good for them. Seemed the allure of my supposed secret girlfriend was enough to make people brave. That was going to become a problem real quick. Now that Bootleg smelled a juicy story, they wouldn't leave me alone until they got to the bottom of it.
That's not what I heard,
someone said behind me. Sounded like Mo Daly.
I heard he rescued her out on the lake and carried her all the way back to his place. She's there recovering now.
What the? Were they talking about me?
Why would he carry her? He has a truck.
That was Randy Jenkins.
I don't know. That's just what someone was saying over at Build-A-Shine earlier. There ain't a lick of truth to that.
Randy said.
I heard from a very reliable source that he got himself a mail order bride. No shit. Swear on my Granny Patsy's grave, God rest her soul. May she rest in peace. How does that even work?
Mo asked.
Well, I don't know how Gibson did it,
Randy said.
But my great-uncle Earl got a mail-order bride back in the day. He and my great-aunt were married 40-odd years before he passed, God rest his soul. May he rest in peace. Ain't that something?
Mail order bride? Where in the hell had he gotten that idea? I was about to turn around and set them straight, but Hung interrupted.
Ready, Gibbs?
I scowled over my shoulder. Sometimes the men in this town were as big of gossips as the women. Fine, yeah. We started in on our set, but something was off. My guitar was in tune, and Hung and Corbin played well, as usual. It wasn't the music. Our songs felt right. It was the crowd. They were watching me, but not the way they normally watched us when we played. People leaned in to talk to each other, their conversations animated, their eyes focused on me. Who else thought I'd brought home a mail-order bride? What other stories were circulating around town? Scarlett sat with Devlin, Cassidy, and Bowie at a table off to the side. Three of them were having a good laugh about something, but not Scarlett. Nope, her eyes were on me, scrutinizing. What was that girl thinking? We played some more songs, but my heart wasn't in it. I kept thinking about Callie. Was she still at my place? Had she decided to run again? Would someone recognize her if they caught a glimpse? I didn't think so. If she came out and said she was Callie Kendall, I reckon people would believe her eventually, but she looked different enough she could get away with pretending to be someone else. I'd barely recognized her. Thought I was crazy until she'd showed up at my doorstep. People wouldn't know. Problem was, my oh-so-neighborly neighbors were going to keep trying to find out the truth about who was staying at my place, and if Scarlett was involved, she'd play dirty. Our last song ended, finally, and I put my guitar away, downed the rest of my water. I glanced over, and Scarlett was glaring at me. She raised her eyebrows and curled her finger, motioning for me to come to her table. Oh, hell. I left my guitar behind the stage and went to the table she shared with Devlin, Cassidy, and Beau.
Hey, Gibbs,
Cassidy said, giving me what she probably thought was a subtle wink.
How'd that lavender shampoo and conditioner work out for you?
I groaned. I already hated this conversation.
Gibson Bodine, I'm ashamed of you,
Scarlett said. What the hell did I do now?
How could you leave that girl all alone while you go out to a bar?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't play dumb with me.
She hopped off her stool and poked me in the chest.
I know she was there this morning because you had a strange car in front of your house, and I saw her pretty sandals in your living room. And I know she didn't leave because Cassidy caught you buying girly shampoo at the pop-in. So why on earth did you leave her at home?
I glanced around. For fuck's sake, Scar, lower your voice.
Why are you trying to keep this from us?
Damn it. She was going to make this a bigger deal than it already was. Half the bar was leaning closer, trying to pretend they weren't eavesdropping. I could tell Scarlett the truth. I trusted her, but I didn't want to without asking Callie first. I'm not keeping anything from you. I told you already, she's just a friend. She's got some stuff going on in her life, and she needed a place to crash.
So you don't like her?
Scarlett asked. God damn, I really fucking do. Yeah, I do, but that's not...
See?
Scarlett squealed.
I can tell. I know you better than almost anyone, Gibbs. I can see it in your face. I don't care what you say. You're sprung on this girl.
Bowie was looking at me with a sly grin on his face. He and Devlin shared a meaningful glance. Cassidy had a very distinct, I know the truth about you smile. Grinding my teeth together, I clenched my fists. They were seriously pissing me off. Why couldn't they just leave well enough alone? Look, it's complicated.
What's her name?
Maya, but I closed my mouth. damn it. At least I hadn't said Callie. Crap, I needed to calm down. I was getting too angry to think straight.
That's pretty, Cassidy said. Maya what? Or do you not know her last name?
I glared at Cass. Yes, I know her last name. It's Davis, and I don't appreciate what you're implying.
I'm not implying anything, Cassidy said. But really, Gibbs, what bar were you at last night?
Scarlett asked.
I didn't think y'all were playing out of town again this week.
I didn't pick her up at a fucking bar, I said. She works for a record company in L.A., and whether or not she's my secret girlfriend is none of y'all's business. Damn it. Now I was making it worse. I needed to cut my losses and get out of here. Just stay out of it, I said, and stomped back to the stage to grab my guitar. Without bothering to look back, I muscled my way through the bar and out the door. Fuck, I was stupid when I was angry. I hadn't meant to say anything. I should have canceled tonight's gig and stayed home, made it up to Hung and Corbin somehow. I got in my truck and put my guitar case on the passenger seat. My tires squealed on the pavement as I tore out of the parking lot headed for home. By the time I got back to my place, I'd calmed down. I parked in front of my house and let my head fall back against the headrest. I'd screwed that up pretty good. Now they really thought I had a girlfriend tucked away in my cabin, and it wouldn't matter how many times I denied it, especially as long as Callie was still essentially in hiding. I had a feeling she wasn't gonna like this. I'd just have to go in there and tell her I'd made a messy situation that much messier.
Chapter 11. Maya. A nudge to my leg and a quiet voice woke me with a start. I gasped, blinking, trying to see in the dim light. For a second, I had no idea where I was.
Didn't mean to scare you, Gibson whispered.
Right. I was at Gibson's house. I'd fallen asleep on his couch, waiting for him to come home. It's okay. What time is it?
Almost 11.
I sat up and stretched my arms overhead, the blanket I'd grabbed sliding down to my lap. It's not even late. I must still be jet-lagged. How was your night? He lowered himself to the edge of the couch next to me.
Okay, I guess. But there's something I need to talk to you about.
His tone made me a little nervous. He sounded so serious. Sure, what's up?
I told you people were gonna talk, and they were.
About your secret girlfriend? I reached over and poked his arm. He scowled at me.
Yeah. Scarlett's convinced of it. She was asking me questions, and I think I might have made it worse.
What did you say?
I don't even remember now. I said your name's Maya and you work for a record company. And I tried to tell him you're not my girlfriend, but I got frustrated and I don't think I did a very good job of it.
Could this man be any more adorable? He sat on the edge of the couch with his elbows resting on his knees, his head bent forward. It was like he'd just told me he'd blurted out that Callie Kendall was back. I rubbed a few circles across his back. Maybe I was being a little too familiar, but he didn't flinch away or tell me to stop. Just glanced at me over his shoulder, a groove between his dark eyebrows. I'm sure it's not that bad, I said. What's the worst that will happen? People will say your girlfriend is staying with you. There's no real harm in that. He abruptly stood.
No. The worst that will happen is we'll have half the town camped out in front of the house by tomorrow afternoon, everyone waiting to get a look at you. Hell, Cassidy's probably already researching Maya Davis.
She won't find much. I've never used social media, and I try to keep my picture off the internet as much as possible. He grunted and walked into the kitchen. I fiddled with the edge of the blanket. I wasn't worried about the town's curiosity because I'd made a decision while Gibson had been out. I wasn't going to run again. I was still afraid of where this road led, but as I watched him pace from the kitchen and back, I knew it was the right choice. People had protected me for a long time. They'd put themselves at risk to keep me safe. Gibson's parents, Quincy and Henna, even Jenny Leland. And since my case had been reopened, that list had only grown. All those people, the Bodines, the Tuckers, the others in town who were trying to find out the truth, had become targets. And most of them had no idea they were in danger. There was no way I could leave them to face that alone, not when I could help. It was time I did something to protect the people who'd done so much for me, regardless of the risks. Gibson, I need to come forward and tell the truth, I said. Gibson stopped in front of me.
Tell people that you're Callie?
I nodded.
No.
Yes. My hands trembled, and I felt as if I were dissipating into mist. Maya morphing into Callie, then back again. Fear swirling with resolve. I balled my hands into fists to stop them from shaking.
You said yourself, people are going to dig. You have to understand, the judge is dangerous, and not just to me. He could...
I don't want to think about what he could do to you, to a lot of people.
I'm not worried about anyone else. I'm worried about you. You told me you stayed away because it wasn't safe. It's no different now. In fact, it's probably worse.
That's exactly why I have to come forward. He crouched in front of me, resting his elbows on his knees.
I don't want to put you in danger.
Gibson, I have to do this. His eyes held mine, his gaze intense. A part of me wanted to shrink away, hide from his scrutiny. Another part wanted to wrap myself around him and beg him not to let me go. He stood again and rubbed his chin.
Fine, but if you're going to do this, we need to be smart about it. You can't just show up on Lake Drive tomorrow and start saying hi to people.
What do you suggest?
Start small. We'll tell my family first. We can trust them, and it'll get them off my ass.
There was reassurance in that idea. Safety. Okay.
That kind of means more than just my brothers and Scarlet. We'll have to tell Cass, and that means Sheriff Tucker. It also means Junie and George, and Shelby.
That seems like a good start.
But to the rest of the town, you stay Maya, he said, pointing at me. At least until we figure out what to do about the judge.
I can live with that. But if I go out, do you think people will recognize me? Or should I just stay hunkered down here? Truthfully, the idea of hiding out in Gibson's cabin for a while sounded nice. I liked it here.
No, if you stay here, it'll just make everyone more curious. They'll assume we're hiding something. We'll just need to sell everyone on the story that you're Maya Davis. People might think you look familiar, but you've changed. And after Abby Gilbert, no one's going to be quick to believe the real Callie is back.
Absently, my fingers went to the thin ridge of scar tissue on my cheek. It was the strangest thing. Gibson didn't seem to notice it at all. Okay, so we tell your family, and we tell the rest of the town that I'm Maya Davis.
Right.
Without meaning to, I tongued the notch in my lip. I tended to do that when I was nervous. And that Maya is your... He rubbed the back of his neck.
It would probably help if we went along with the girlfriend story. That'll be gossip enough for the town to chew on for a while.
I grinned at him. I take it Gibson Bodine with a real girlfriend isn't something they're used to seeing. He shook his head and grunted. God, this guy. So adorable. I realized that probably meant his body count was high. A man like him would have no shortage of willing women. But it didn't bother me. I'd had my share of flings and brief relationships. It had been a while since I'd been with anyone, but I'd never stayed with one guy for long, mostly because I never stayed in one place. And there I went again, thinking about Gibson all wrong. This pretend girlfriend thing was already going in my head, but I couldn't help it. I didn't typically go for men who were so surly and brooding. Usually that was because they were a client I was trying to coax back into productivity. But Gibson's gruff demeanor, brooding looks, and gravelly voice were irresistible. It was probably a good thing he'd gotten up from the couch, or I might have crawled into his lap. "I can play along," I said. "Record producer Maya Davis meets Gibson Bodine, sexy carpenter by day, country bar singer by night. Sparks fly, and the next thing you know, Bootleg Springs has a new couple to whisper about." He gave me a quick nod, and I couldn't tell how he felt about this plan. Did he hate the idea of having to pretend we were together, or was he just frustrated that his neighbors wouldn't leave him alone? It was hard to be sure. "Don't take this the wrong way, but if we tell all those people but keep it from the rest of the town, will it stay quiet? Like you said, this is Bootleg Springs. Secrets don't stay secret for long."
"Sometimes they do," he said. "And if they tell anyone, I'll..."
"You'll what?" He scowled.
"I don't know, but they won't like it."
Gibson's truck bounced on the gravel road, the early morning light filtering through the trees. It wasn't long after dawn, but he'd said the Bodines always did their business over breakfast. I hugged his flannel shirt around me, my stomach churning with nerves. I'd barely slept last night. Seeing Gibson was one thing, but I was about to step in front of nearly a dozen bootleggers and tell them the truth about who I was. These people had kept hope alive for almost 13 years, left my missing persons posters up long after the case had gone cold, held on to the belief that I'd one day be found. This entire community had mourned when they'd heard I was dead. It both broke my heart and made me furious at the Kendalls. He stopped, although I couldn't tell why. There was nothing out here, just trees. "Where are we going?"
"Secret Hot Springs," he said. "I signed up for 2 hours, so we should have plenty of time."
"You have to sign up to go to the hot springs?" He turned off the truck.
"This one, yeah."
"Why?" His eyebrows lifted. "Oh," I said, letting out a nervous and unflattering giggle. "I get it, to prevent interruptions. So I guess people will just think you and your secret girlfriend are getting serious." He grunted and opened the door. We walked down a path in the woods, passing several large no trespassing signs. The air grew heavy with moisture, a thin mist curling between the trees. Voices up ahead broke the enchanted silence of the woods. Gibson clasped my hand in his and walked in front of me, blocking me from view. My heart rate kicked into overdrive, but Gibson squeezed my hand, leading me forward.
"There you are," a male voice said. "What in the hell are we doing out here?" "Damn it, Gibbs, you said there would be breakfast."
"I'm all for meeting your lady friend, but couldn't we have done this at Moonshine?"
That sounded like Scarlet.
"Where there's caffeine and pancakes."
Gibson stopped and, without letting go of my hand, nudged me so I'd stay behind him.
"No, we couldn't do this at Moonshine."
"Okay, well, we're all here."
The first voice again. Maybe Bowie?
"You gonna tell us what this is about?"
He took a deep breath.
"I do have a woman staying at my place, but she's not my girlfriend."
"You mean Maya, who works for the fancy record company, ain't your girlfriend?"
Scarlet asked.
"No, she's not. And her name isn't Maya. Well, it is now, but it didn't used to be."
It was as if the entire forest had gone silent. I didn't even hear a bird chirp.
"Gibbs,"
Scarlet said, her voice tentative.
"What are you talking about?"
Squeezing my hand again, he glanced over his shoulder and nodded. I met his eyes and nodded back. Here went nothing. Gibson drew me out from behind him. I clutched his hand, suddenly afraid to let go. Steam rose from the water of the nearby hot springs, shrouding the area with mist. A group of people stood, mostly in pairs, around the clearing. Most I recognized. A few were new faces, but it was easy to tell who everyone was. Gibson's brothers, Jameson and Bowie, with Leah May and Cassidy. June stood in front of George Thompson, a man who had to be Jonah Bodine was on the end, holding hands with a woman I took to be Shelby. Scarlet was with her boyfriend Devlin, and giving me a reassuring smile was Jonah's mom, Jenny. All eyes were on me. I searched their faces for signs of recognition. Did they know me on sight? Would all of Bootleg know if I showed my face?
"Y'all, this is Callie," Gibson said. "The real Callie."
No one said a word. They stared at me, glanced at each other, and eyed Gibson with confusion.
"Bullshit," Scarlett said, finally breaking the silence. "Since when did you get a sense of humor, Gibbs?"
"I'm serious,"
Gibson said, his tone thick with impatience.
"Maya Davis is Callie Kendall."
Jenny stepped forward, her smile warm. "It's true. This is Callie. We met last year, just like I told you." I struggled to find my voice, the vestiges of my old self warring with my identity as Maya. I wanted to sound calm and collected, at peace with who I was. But I was anything but. "It really is me. I know I look a little different." I touched the scar on my face. "But I'm Callie Kendall. Or I was. I haven't been Callie for a long time."
"Oh my God. Jenny, you're sure this is her?" Scarlett asked, then turned back to me. "No offense intended, but we've been fooled by a lookalike once. And then there's all the misinformation, what with you supposedly being dead and Jenny saying you're not."
"Pose a question only the real Callie would answer correctly," June said.
Bowie turned to her.
"Junie, I think this is really her."
"We need proof,"
June said, her tone completely matter of fact.
"I also intend no offense, but we need to be certain."
"None taken." I took a deep breath. It meant reaching into the box. But I could handle digging through memories of my summers with all the kids in Bootleg. "Go ahead, ask me something."
"I have one,"
Bowie said.
"The last summer you were here, who fell off the roof of the Rusty Tool?"
It took me a second, but the memory came to me. I smiled. "Nash Larrabee." Bowie nodded.
"And how many bones did he break?"
"Zero," I said. "People said it was a miracle. But 2 days later, he tripped on the flat sidewalk and broke three. That night, you drove him down to the lake in a recliner tied up in the back of someone's pickup."
"She's right," Jameson said. "I remember that."
"Yeah," Bowie said, his voice awed.
"There's still something I gotta see."
Cassidy stepped closer and lowered her voice.
"Would you mind pushing your sleeve up a bit?"
Gibson shifted closer. Was he growling?
"Easy, Gibbs," Cassidy said. "Like Junie said, we need to be certain."
I pried my hand from Gibson's and held out my arm, palm up. I knew exactly what she was looking for, although I had no idea how she would know this. With a deep breath, I pushed the sleeve almost to my elbow, revealing my tattooed forearm. Tattooed and scarred. Cassidy gently held my wrist and looked closely at my arm. Touched it gently, feeling the ridges of my scars. She nodded and spoke quietly.
"Your tattoos are real pretty."
"How'd you know what was under them?"
I whispered. "I've seen a picture."
My stomach felt like it had turned to ice, but I just nodded, quickly pushing down my sleeve.
"It's her," Cassidy said. "It's Callie Kendall."
"You're here?"
Scarlett asked, her eyes brimming with tears.
"You're really alive and you're standing right here?"
My eyes started to sting.
"Yeah. I'm hugging you now. That's just what's happening."
Scarlett came forward and threw her arms around me. I hugged Scarlett back, tears breaking free from the corners of my eyes. Cassidy was next, then Bowie, Jameson, and Leah May. They introduced me to the others, Devlin, Shelby, Jonah, and George.
Jenny wrapped me in a tight hug, and by the time we were finished, my vision was blurry from crying.
I'm glad you're not deceased.
June gave me an awkward pat on the shoulder. Thanks. I wiped the tears off my cheeks. Me too.
Wow, Cassidy said. This makes a lot of sense, but I have even more questions than I did last night.
What are you talking about, Cass? Scarlet asked.
After Gibbs told us the friend named Maya story, I did a little digging. I found a Maya Davis on Adelon Records' website, but it was almost impossible to find any more information. No photos of her, and there's nothing prior to 12 or 13 years ago, like she didn't exist. But I guess she didn't.
I know you have so many questions.
Only like a million, Scarlet said.
Where have you been all this time? Why did you disappear? Why didn't you ever come back?
She did come back, June said. She's right there.
But why did it take 13 years? Scarlet continued. Why did my daddy help you? And why did he keep your sweater?
Enough, Gibson said, his voice booming through the woods. Scar, I think we all know why she left. And she couldn't come back for the same reason. It wasn't safe. It's still in.
The judge, Devlin said.
You didn't give yourself those scars, did you? Cassidy asked. I shook my head. No, I didn't.
Did you ever try to tell someone? Shelby asked. A friend or maybe a teacher?
I started to say no, but that wasn't true.
Once, I told a teacher, but only because she was persistent. Nothing ever came of it, and I was too scared to try again. I hid the evidence under my clothes. As for your dad, Scarlet, he found me on the side of the road and agreed to help me get away. But I don't know why he kept the sweater.
His drunk ass probably forgot he had it,
Gibson said.
I think he kept it as a reminder of something good he'd done, Jenny said. He had a lot of regrets in his life. I should know. I'm one of them.
Oh, Jenny, don't, Scarlet said.
It's okay. I made my peace with that a long time ago, Jenny said. But I really think that's why. Maybe it was something he felt he could be proud of.
My stomach churned with nausea. I needed to change the subject, stop talking about that night. There were hazy spots in my memory that made my vision seem blurry, like something was trying to break free. I shied away from it.
I want you all to know how sorry I am for disappearing. I'm sorry you didn't know I was okay.
She didn't have a choice,
Gibson said, his voice uncharacteristically soft.
Where did you go? Scarlet asked.
A little town in upstate New York called Blue Moon Bend. A couple, Quincy and Hannah, took me in. They were friends of a friend. I think you'd have to meet them to understand why, but I knew I could trust them to help me. I went to them thinking they'd shuttle me off to the next place where I could hide, but they insisted I stay. They're amazing people. A little odd, maybe, but amazing. They took very good care of me, helped me heal. I lived there until I was 19. Since then, I've been all over the world.
Where do you live now? Leah May asked.
I hesitated, not sure how to answer.
Well, I was just on tour with a band, Outbound Platinum. Before that, I was in Seattle for a little while. Before that, it was Nashville.
I paused again, thinking back. My trips tended to blur together.
I was in London for a few months. I don't have a permanent place to live, really. I stay in hotels a lot, sometimes rent a temporary apartment. If I'm in LA for more than a few days, I crash with a friend, and I try to get out to Blue Moon every so often to see Quincy and Hannah.
Always running, Jenny said. I'd never thought of it as running, but perhaps there was a bit of truth to that. My lifestyle made it easier to stay hidden.
Yeah, I guess so.
But you can come back now, Scarlet said.
Not so fast, Scar, Gibson said. I need to make something perfectly clear. This stays between us. To everyone else, she's Maya. Anyone so much as thinks the name Callie in front of other people, I'll break them in half.
Gibson, you know I can't do that, Cassidy said. That's okay, I said quickly. I could feel Gibson getting angry. Your dad needs to know, too. I'm prepared to talk to him, as long as we can keep it quiet for now.
Gibbs is actually right about keeping her a secret,
Devlin said.
We can't forget what we're dealing with here. There's a falsified forensics report, harassment, not to mention more than one mysterious death that could be tied to the judge.
Jonah stepped forward.
I'm seconding this. We need to be very careful.
He's dangerous, I said. Please don't underestimate him.
Which is why y'all are going to keep your fucking mouths shut, Gibson said.
Of course we'll keep her safe, Scarlet said. Her mouth turned up in a little grin. But y'all realize you'll have to keep up the pretense that you're dating, right? People might look at you twice, but if we all stick to the story that you're Gibson's girlfriend Maya, it'll work.
My eyes darted to Gibson, but I couldn't read his expression.
Yeah, that's the plan.
She's right, Leah May said. We want to control the narrative. In this case, it means giving Bootleg Springs something else to talk about.
A distraction,
Devlin said, nodding.
And let's be honest, Gibbs,
Bowie said, patting him on the back, a big grin on his face.
You walking around town with a girl on your arm is going to be one hell of a distraction.
Chapter 12, Maya. Gibson's family left the hot springs in small groups about 10 minutes apart. They didn't want anyone in town noticing that we'd all been out there at the same time. I watched June and George go, the last of the group besides me and Gibson. June was telling George what sounded like a complicated plan to take a winding route back to town to throw off any pursuers. She didn't seem swayed by George's good-natured reminder that no one was actually in pursuit. We left shortly after and went straight back to Gibson's house. Someone had left a tinfoil-wrapped dish outside the front door with a little note. Gibson brought it inside and tossed it on the counter, grumbling about nosy neighbors. He got 2 calls and a text, all from different family members, confirming that the Kendalls weren't in town. Their house had been vacant for at least several days, maybe longer. That was good news. There was a low risk that I'd run into them unexpectedly, which meant I could go into town. After a late breakfast of scrambled eggs, Gibson cooked today, we decided it was time to see if we could pull off our plan. Either I was going to show up in Bootleg and cause an uproar, or they were going to buy our story that I was Maya. We went outside and Gibson locked the door behind me. It was still warm summer weather here in West Virginia, the sun bright in the clear blue sky. We walked out to his truck, the gravel crunching beneath my sandals. What happened to your old truck? I asked. The blue one you used to have.
It died, he said. It was old when I got it, and I wasn't exactly easy on it. I've had this one for a few years. I got it mostly to haul lumber, but I've been driving it full time for a while.
We both got in and I fastened my seatbelt. Why?
I hit a patch of ice trying to avoid a deer last winter in my other car, he said. Wound up hitting a tree instead. I had to save up to get the bodywork done, and now I have to wait because my guy's busy. But I don't trust my baby with anyone else.
Your baby?
1968 Charger, he said with pride.
I could imagine him in a hot muscle car. That's literally the perfect car for you.
Yep.
His lips turned up in a little smile.
She purrs like a kitten.
Shifting in my seat, I looked out the window. He really needed to stop being so effortlessly sexy.
He was killing me. We headed out the long drive toward the road, then down the twisting highway that led into Bootleg Springs. I braced myself as the town came into view, expecting to feel a rush of anxiety. The last time I'd seen this place was the day I left. But instead of hitting me with a flood of bad memories, the sight of Bootleg Springs was comforting. It had changed in 13 years, but not so much that it wasn't recognizable. There were more stores and restaurants than I remembered, but the town still had a quaint, lived-in feel. The buildings were worn but friendly. A small knot of senior citizens sat on benches outside the brunch club, and a chicken strutted her stuff down the sidewalk, stopping to scratch and peck. "Is that Mona Lisa McNugget?" Gibson glanced over as he parked.
"Yep. I think this is Mona Lisa the Fifth, though."
"I guess I don't know the lifespan of a chicken. They just keep renaming them Mona Lisa?"
"It's tradition."
I really had missed this place. He found a spot and turned off his truck, but paused, not reaching for the door handle to get out.
"Are you sure you're ready for this?"
I fluffed out my hair and slipped on my oversized sunglasses. "I'm ready." I decided to wear a tank top today, letting my tattooed arms show. Callie had always worn long sleeves to hide her wounds. But as Maya, I'd tattooed a delicate mandala pattern over my scars. Not only did it make them almost invisible, it had been my way of taking my body back. Gibson got out, and I followed him onto the sidewalk, shouldering my big handbag. I turned a slow circle, letting the moment sink in. I was back in Bootleg Springs. A tingly feeling skittered up my spine. Henna would say it was a premonition, or the energy of the universe telling me something. I decided it meant I was where I was supposed to be, that I'd made the right decision in staying. Without quite looking at me, Gibson cleared his throat and took my hand in his. I couldn't tell if he was nervous or irritated at having to hold hands. Gibbs had always been a little rough around the edges, and it was becoming clear that time hadn't softened him. If anything, he was harder now than he'd been when I'd known him before. Not that it bothered me. He wasn't trying to hide anything. So many of the artists I worked with adopted a mask, an identity they showed the world. Usually it was the person they thought their fans expected them to be, but it wasn't really who they were. I got the sense that with Gibson, what you saw was what you got. I liked that about him. I also liked the way it felt to walk with him down the sidewalk hand in hand, but I knew I shouldn't dwell on that. He led me toward Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee. Heads turned as we walked, people's eyes darting between the two of us. It made me a little nervous, but it didn't seem like anyone recognized me. I doubted even Gibson would have known who I was if he'd seen me with big sunglasses on. And they weren't really looking at me, anyway. They were looking at us. Maybe he'd been right. Gibson Bodine walking around town with a girl was gossip enough. The scent of coffee and sugary baked goods filled the air as Gibson held the door open for me. I kept my sunglasses on for now. I figured it worked with my look, what with my wild hair and tattoos, and they made me feel like I could hide in plain sight. "Hey, Gibbs," the young lady behind the counter said. Her eyes flicked to me, then back again. "What can I get you?"
"The usual."
He glanced at me and raised his eyebrows.
"Maya?"
Hearing him say my name, that name, took some of the tension out of my body. "Coffee with cream, please."
"Sure,"
she said with a smile. "To go?"
"Yeah."
Gibson let go of my hand long enough to take out his wallet and toss some cash on the counter. He stuffed a couple dollars in the tip jar, then clasped my hand again. A guy I didn't recognize sat at a table near the window staring at me. Gibson stepped in front of me, blocking me from the guy's view. I leaned slightly to the left to peek around Gibson's shoulder and caught a glimpse of the guy's face going pale. Was Gibson growling at him? I bit back a giggle while the guy turned away, almost knocking his coffee over in the process. I'd never been with a man who was so protective. Not that Gibson and I were actually together, but I was grateful for the way he seemed to guard me. Selling my identity as Maya to the people of Bootleg was important to keeping me safe. And with Gibson Bodine standing guard, I felt surprisingly secure. We got our coffees and left. The late summer air felt good. It reminded me of long days spent at the lake, swimming in the bath-like water, the smell of sunscreen and bonfire smoke, the good parts of the time when I'd been Callie.
"Hey there, y'all," Scarlet's chipper voice came from up ahead. "Good to see you, Maya. How do you like Bootleg Springs?"
Gibson groaned and muttered something under his breath about not needing to yell, but the conspiratorial grin on Scarlet's face made me smile.
"It's such a nice town," I said.
From the corner of my eye, I noticed a couple of the seniors sitting outside the brunch club leaning forward like they were trying to eavesdrop.
"So far, I like it here."
"Course it's a nice town," Scarlet said. "Well, Maya, I hope you enjoy your visit. Nice to see you again, Maya."
"Jesus, Scar," Gibson said. "You don't have to keep saying her name."
Scarlet lowered her voice.
"I'm just making sure everyone heard."
"So where are we off to next?" I asked.
"I need to run to the hardware store," Gibson said with a shrug.
"I have a better idea."
Scarlet sidled up next to me and slipped her arm through mine.
"Let's do a little shopping."
"No,"
Gibson said.
"Oh, come on, Gibbs," Scarlet said. "Your sister needs time to get to know your new girlfriend. This is how things are done, girl bonding and all that. We'll catch up with you later."
Scarlet tugged me forward, and it took half a second for Gibson to let go of my hand. I glanced back at him and shrugged one shoulder.
"I'll see you in a bit."
He glowered at us but didn't reply.
"I know the perfect place," Scarlet said.
She kept her arm tucked around mine like we were longtime best friends.
"Leah May just opened up her own shop, and she has the cutest clothes. No pressure to spend money, but it's fun to look."
"Actually, I could use a few new things."
"See, I told you this was perfect."
Scarlet greeted people as we walked, waving and taking every opportunity to introduce me. She even shouted across the street,
"Hey, y'all, this is Gibson's new girlfriend, Maya."
I smiled and lifted my hand in a little wave each time. When we got to a small storefront with a sign that said Boots and Lace, we stopped. I glanced over my shoulder. Gibson was still standing in the middle of the sidewalk, his arms crossed over his thick chest, coffee in one hand. Scarlet pushed the door open. With one last glance at Gibbs, I went inside behind her, taking off my sunglasses and tucking them in my bag. The air-conditioned store felt nice. It was small, but bright and cheery, with an eclectic mix of clothing and accessories. There were distressed jeans, flowing dresses, frilly tops and tight skirts. Cowboy boots sat on a shelf next to stiletto heels. A display near the counter sparkled with earrings, necklaces, and bracelets, as well as some very cute handbags. There weren't any other customers, but Leah May stood behind the counter, an open book in her hands. Her eyebrows were lifted, her mouth parted in a circle.
"What you reading?"
Scarlet asked. Leah May startled, blinking as she looked up from her book.
"Oh my God, you scared me. Sorry, I didn't hear you come in. It's that book for June's book club. Have you read it yet?"
"Not yet."
Scarlet pulled on the sleeve of a blue shirt.
"Is it any good?"
"Well..."
Leah May's cheeks colored. She closed the book and tucked it beneath the counter.
"Yes, it's really good, but different. You kind of need to read it for yourself to see."
"Guess I'll have to start it tonight,"
Scarlet said.
"Hey, Maya," Leah May said. "What are y'all up to?"
"We're doing a little shopping while Gibson goes to the hardware store," I said. "Or at least I think he's going to the hardware store. Last I saw, he was still standing in the same spot, watching us walk away."
"Oh, Gibbs is just being overprotective,"
Scarlet said. She grabbed a dress and held it up to me.
"This would look adorable on you."
It really would, Leah May said. I took the dress from Scarlett and draped it over my arm. Is he always so grumpy? Scarlett filled in for me. I was thinking guarded and serious, but yeah. He does have a temper on him, but he wouldn't hurt a fly, Scarlett said. She paused and pressed her lips together as if thinking. Well, he wouldn't hurt a fly unless it mouthed off to him at the lookout and he was looking for a brawl. But that's all, bootleg man. True, Leah May said, nodding. Scarlett glanced around. There's no one in the dressing room, is there? Leah May shook her head. No, I had customers earlier, but right now it's just us. Have you heard anything yet about... Scarlett trailed off, nodding her head toward me. Oh, yeah, Leah May said. Jameson and I had breakfast at Moonshine after... You know, people are all aflutter about Gibson's new girlfriend. But just that, right? Scarlett asked. Gossip's all about Maya. Yep. There's talk about how y'all met. There's apparently a rumor going round that you were a mail-order bride, but I don't think many believe it. Mostly people are just surprised that Gibson has a real girlfriend. That's what I've been hearing, too, Scarlett said. I took slow steps through the store, touching items as if my attention was on the clothes, but I was thinking about Gibson. I take it that's big news, Gibson having a girlfriend. Is it ever? I can't remember the last time he admitted he was dating someone. Maybe not since... Scarlett paused and made a disgusted face. I won't even say her name. Anyway, he takes his lone wolf status seriously. Mostly just occasional hookups with random girls he meets when he's playing. Scarlett, Leah May hissed. I bit my bottom lip to keep from laughing. Well, it's true, Scarlett said. She held up another dress, first in front of herself, then on me. This one's more my color. Anyway, when it comes to Gibbs, there's no point in sugarcoating it, but don't let that put you off. My brother's a good man, deep down.
That is your color, and his relationship history isn't my business anyway.
Speak of the devil, Leah May said, pointing out the window.
I glanced outside. Misty Lynn Prosser paused, snapping gum between her teeth. Her eyes roamed over the window display. She was dressed in a hot pink tube top. Maybe it was just the angle, but it looked like her boobs might be crooked.
Oh, hell no, Scarlett said. If she comes in, can I kick her ass out?
Yes, Leah May said.
Good.
A flash of anger burst through me. She'd stolen Gibson's wallet and turned in the photos he'd kept. Photos of me and him. It didn't bother me that he'd dated her. That had been a long time ago, and he wasn't really my boyfriend anyway. But it did bother me, deeply, that she'd used me to try to hurt him. It made me want to march out there and give her a piece of my mind. Misty Lynn flipped her bleached-out hair over her shoulder and walked by without coming inside.
Damn, Scarlett said. I was hoping I'd get to escort her out.
She never comes in, Leah May said. Which is fine by me. I know you're supposed to be courteous to your customers no matter who they are, but I think Misty Lynn is the universal exception to that rule.
I agree, I said. Not that you need a reason, but do you have bad blood with Misty Lynn?
Scarlett asked. I glanced toward the window again. Not from before, but she turned in those pictures of me and Gibbs. Am I wrong in assuming she did it to hurt him and not because she thought it was the right thing to do? Maybe I'm jumping to conclusions.
You're not jumping to anything, Leah May said. Bex told me Misty Lynn sashayed into the sheriff's office like she was expecting a blue ribbon. She didn't even show a lick of remorse that she'd broken Gibson's window or that she'd committed theft. She wanted to get him in trouble.
God, that pisses me off.
She cheated on him, too, Scarlett said.
She what?
Scarlett nodded.
Back when they dated. It was right after our mom died. That's mostly why I hate her so much. I didn't like her before. Let's be honest, she's never been very likable. But after she cheated on my brother, she made an enemy for life.
I decided in that moment that I hated Misty Lynn, too. Hate was a strong word, but no one hurt my Gibson and got away with it. I didn't care if he wasn't my boyfriend. He was still mine, in a way, even if we were just friends. That woman needs a solid dose of bootleg justice, Leah May said. I couldn't have agreed more. Leah May and Scarlett chatted a while longer, mostly about Leah May and Jameson's wedding plans. I wandered through the store looking at clothes. I really did need a few new things. I didn't own a lot of clothes, mostly because I hadn't had a permanent place to live for so long. I didn't own a lot of anything. Living out of a suitcase didn't leave room for many belongings. Running my fingers over the soft fabric of a floral dress, I imagined my clothes hanging in a closet, my things folded neatly and tucked away in drawers that smelled like cedar. What would that be like? To have a home again? To belong somewhere? I liked my life. I'd made a career for myself in music, which wasn't an easy thing to do. I enjoyed traveling, touring, meeting new people, seeing new places. But Jenny had been right. I'd spent a long time running. The door swung open and Gibson poked his head in.
Finished. You ready?
That was fast, Scarlett smirked at him. I guess you couldn't wait to get back to your girlfriend. He glared at her. I laughed softly. Almost ready. I'm just going to get this. Gibson stepped inside and let the door shut behind him. He had a bag that said the rusty tool in his hand. Leah May and Scarlett seemed to share a look, but Leah May just took the dress and scanned the tag.
I'll give you the family discount, she said with a wink.
Thanks. I paid and she handed me a cute little shopping bag. A group of girls, probably high school age, came in, giggling and talking. Gibson appeared to ignore them. In fact, he appeared to be ignoring everyone except me. Bye, ladies, I said and headed for the door.
See y'all later, Scarlett said. Thanks for the mini shopping trip, Maya. Have fun with your girlfriend, Gibbs.
Gibson grumbled as he took my hand and led me out the door.
Chapter 13. Gibson. The trip into town yesterday had done its job, solidifying Callie's identity as Maya. Grudgingly, I had to admit that Scarlett loudmouthing her name on the street had been effective, and with my family all confirming the story, Bootleg Springs was not only convinced, they were too distracted by the fact that I supposedly had a girlfriend to question her name. It also seemed to have taken the attention off my visit to the sheriff's office and those pictures I'd been carrying in my wallet. Her secret was safe, for now. Cassidy had passed the truth about Callie on to her dad, and he'd called me to ask some questions. He told me straight that his first priority was keeping her safe, made me feel better about cooperating with him. We'd agreed that it would be best if he met with Callie at his house, under the auspices of dinner, rather than at the station. Dinner with the Tuckers wouldn't raise eyebrows, whereas the new girl in town meeting with the sheriff in his office would. For now, we just needed to lay low and keep up the pretense that we were dating. I'd have been happy to hunker down here and ignore the town, but I knew that if we didn't show our faces, it would start feeding the rumor mill again. I didn't need half the town claiming I was holding her hostage. Which was why I was standing in my living room, wearing my best jeans and boots, waiting for a girl I wasn't dating to finish getting ready for our date. I looked out the window, my arms crossed, feeling nervous as hell. Why? No idea. We were just grabbing dinner at Moonshine, not even a fancy date. Then Scarlett was having a bonfire out at her place. The new house she and Devlin were building would be done before next summer, so she wanted to get in some more bonfires at her lake cottage while they were still living there. Nothing to be nervous about. It wasn't even a real date. And since when did I get nervous about a girl? Since never. Callie came out of my room wearing a floral dress. It had thin straps and stopped just above her knees, showing a lot of tanned skin, not to mention those sexy-ass tattoos. Her thick, multicolored hair fell in waves down her back, and she'd put on bright lipstick and a pair of dark-rimmed glasses. I didn't know you wore glasses.
I don't, she said. They're not prescription, they just have a blue light filter.
A what? She adjusted the glasses.
Electronic devices emit blue light, and some people say it's bad for us to be exposed to so much. Someone in Blue Moon told Quincy and Hannah, and they insisted I get some special glasses. The ones they suggested looked more like safety goggles, so I found these as a compromise. I figure they might help me look different, since I won't be wearing sunglasses in the dark. It worked for Superman, right?
Huh.
You don't like them?
There was a hint of a smile on her lips, and I had a feeling that if I said no, I hated them, she'd just smile that big pretty smile of hers and go on wearing them. But I didn't hate them. They looked adorable on her. They're fine.